Welcome to the One-Off Technology Podcast with opinions, news, and views. On this podcast, we talk about technology topics and how they affect you. I'm your host, Roy Richardson, and each week we will feature an entertaining guest to talk about different topics. Now let's begin the show. Hey guys, and welcome to the One-Off Technology Podcast. And today I have two guests, so we are privileged today. We have our usual guest, Chuck Brink. And also today we have Phil Berta on. And so today we're going to talk about something that's near and dear to their hearts, and that is gaming. And the name of this episode is All I Need to Know in Life I Learned from Call of Duty. We're going to talk about video games and education and video games as war simulators, like, for example, the military using it to prepare for drones. Talk about Minecraft and how Microsoft's making such a big push to put Minecraft into schools to kind of boost imagination and building and kind of teach kids to have self-esteem and believe they can do the impossible, because luckily when you're using your imagination, you can do the impossible. And so Chuck and Phil are eminent gamers. They game way more than I ever do. I just happen to have a gaming prodigy in my house. My daughter, who's actually not very good at playing Minecraft, but can tell you, thanks to Stampy, everything you'd ever want to know about Minecraft. So,
I could have used her earlier today. Wow.
Really? Yeah. She's like always telling my son, hey, you do this. Oh, if you do that, that'll work. And then you can make this out of it. Oh, wow. Okay. So,
right.
She was earlier today explaining, you know, Minecraft story mode to him, and he was getting frustrated. I've already seen that video. I already know about that. So, anyway, so as most people probably know, Microsoft bought Minecraft about a year, maybe a year and a half ago. And also they recently, licensed the rights. There was a company that had permission from Minecraft to use it as a teaching tool and to create teaching tools using Minecraft. And while that company is still a separate entity, Microsoft has licensed the rights to use their stuff and is now making a big push to push Minecraft into schools. What do you guys think about that? Do you think Minecraft is a good teaching tool?
I think in the aspect of writing and playing with circuitry and using Redstone, it's very good. I'm not sure if I would say that it has any other educational aspects besides using Redstone, though.
So you believe that once they graduate from Minecraft, they can go to a company somewhere and make Redstone?
So how much do you know about Minecraft and Redstone and those sort of things within the game?
Talk to me like I'm an idiot, so, because I honestly have never touched Minecraft. So
you'd have to teach me as well. I've played around with it long enough that I got dizzy, because on a big screen, those, after a while, that 8-bit graphics makes my head swim. I like building stuff in Minecraft in creative mode. I like taking the glow stones and using them to create light inside my houses and building islands and such. I get a kick out of that in Minecraft, but admittedly, I am not an expert. I may need to go get my 6-year-old.
I'm not an expert either, but I absolutely love playing Minecraft. Yesterday, I was like, oh, we're going to talk about Minecraft. Let's go ahead. Let me go play a game. Let's see. I need something kind of like Minecraft. Minecraft. So doing some research and listening to other people are saying and education, that what I really like about this Redstone, I don't know if you remember as a kid getting the set that allows you to connect the wires to a light bulb, and then connecting that wire to a battery, and then making the circulation all the way to a light, and then back to the battery, so everything has current, and you hit the switch and you make the light bulb come up.
That was Mr. Peabody Science Lab, right?
Yes, or one of the various other products that was out there. Redstone does that very much in Minecraft, and I find some of the people and some of the time that they take to program in a song using the redstone and the timing and everything like that. It's just amazing. And then some of the people that are making calculators, the logic of calculators show up by actually pressing the big buttons on the screen. It's just amazing. But really outside of that, I'm not sure if I see any other education going along with Minecraft.
Well, I mean, you mentioned about making a calculator with Minecraft. I got to think that maybe if a student is able to make a calculator out of Minecraft, that perhaps they can use that to help learn, you know, advanced math. Now, I've seen like a video where somebody spent like hours upon hours building reactors in Minecraft. That was just so amazing to me. I'm like, and using this to, I can't remember what the reactor made, but whatever the choicest element is in Minecraft, that's what it made. But you know, Microsoft is talking about, you know, like for example, Minecraft participated in the Hour of Code. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but every year, code.com pushes for a week the idea of doing an Hour of Code where kids and educators can work together and work the program in some language, usually a drag and drop visual type language, but certainly, you know, hey, if kids want to learn Python, hey, knock themselves out. That's a good language. But using Minecraft as part of that Hour of Code tutorial in order to teach kids about coding and kind of raise our next generation of programmers and computer scientists. And you mentioned about Redstone being, and the Microsoft website for their education branch of Minecraft talks about how Redstone's a very useful material that's found deep underground, and talks about people making caves and using the pickaxe to go make the redstone. But so you're saying the redstone's kind of like an energy source type thing? Is that what it is?
And I think it's just more of your conduit, your wire that goes in between the connectors.
Okay. All right.
But that allows you to hit a switch though, and that gets the redstone to trigger what's ever at the end of that path.
Wow. Yeah, I think I am going to go get my 6-year-old to come up here and give me a class on redstone so that I, you know, I don't sound like a noob talking about Minecraft. Well, so, you know, the other thing, Lego, you know, I know Lego blocks in and of themselves allow so much imagination, and Lego made an attempt with their Lego world to try to steal some of Minecraft's thunder. And I picked up a copy of the game early on when it was on Steam in beta. And then later they kind of went and abandoned it because I guess it just wasn't getting picked up like they thought it would. Because in some ways it was trying to be so Minecraft-like. Just using Legos instead of using the stones that are available in Minecraft. So, but, you know, Lego branches out and they do the robots. They have all the amazing robots you can make. But, you know, that really kind of takes off topic. You know, what about, so like, for example, the military uses Call of Duty type games in order to train, you know, people in order to be able to control drones, which as I found out today, the military says they don't actually like them to be called drones. They like them to be called unmanned aerial vehicles or remotely piloted aircraft, RPAs. So, of course, they don't actually use Call of Duty. They use those types of games. But they've actually, you know, some scientists were saying, based on studies, they found that kids that played video games of this type wound up being really good drone pilots because they developed the hand-eye coordination for this. And that's the other part of video games, is that video games do lead to immense hand-eye coordination. And the thing about these video gaming worlds is that there is so many things going on the screen at one time that once you get acclimated to where you can see a world where so many things are happening at once and keep up with them, that makes you better able to control the drones and fly them better. But in the case of students in a classroom, that hand-eye coordination has always been linked to reading advancement. You know, you know, when you have someone who's having difficulty reading, I remember reading about studies where they actually took a rubber ball and just played catch with kids in order to try to help them develop hand-eye coordination, because that helped them to advance in their reading skills or their early reading skills. So
I think the eye-hand coordination that comes from gaming is much different than like playing catch with a ball. It's a much different kind of coordination that gets developed. I mean, I've gamed for years and I still have very, very poor real world eye-hand coordination. That spatial relationship between what my eye sees and where my hand's at and where the object is still very bad. But when I'm looking at something that's on screen and where I need to move a character and which commands to issue, that's very easy. I can very easily understand that spatial relationship and decide, you know, which actions I need to take. And I think that's it's a very different skill that gets developed and honed. And when you're, you know, piloting a UAV or, you know, whatever the military is calling their drones, that type of skill gets employed where you're watching a screen and you're deciding how close am I to this, you know, object? Do I need to move up, down, left, right, you know, forward, backwards? Those type of skills come into play very differently than, you know, like real life being able to, you know, hit a baseball or something that's moving at you.
Well, so, but you're able to read large words, you know, big words, right?
Oh, sure.
See, it helped. Whether you think it or not. See, you can read big words. Oh, I know that big word. But, you know, the other part that I think video games helps with is with problem solving. Because, I mean, there's so many games out there that are puzzles and you're trying to solve them. And in a lot of ways, those puzzles kind of match up with things you're going to encounter in real life. And, you know, oh, well, I was able to solve these puzzles. These now, granted, Lemmings may not be actually the game that teaches people what life is all about and how to solve problems, but boy, had it. Those were some hard puzzles in that game. I loved it. And to me, that was a classic puzzle game. But Myst, another awesome puzzle game. But, you know, most of my references are old school from playing video games a long time ago. But hey, Myst came back out like last year, so they revamped it. But I do think that it helps with problem solving, and, you know, in a classroom environment, that problem solving can help kids kind of think spatially, like you were talking about. Maybe it doesn't make them able to catch a ball better, but it, you know, helped them think things more clearly and more easily. I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
Thinking more clearly or anything along those lines. I think what it really does is actually help think faster. I don't know if I can say that it really helps think more clearly.
Okay.
Maybe help make better decisions.
Okay. So,
and I was going to say, I think maybe it helps you develop better non-linear thinking skills that, you're taking a multitude of inputs and circumstances into account. You know, when I was playing a game yesterday, XCOM 2, you know, that's a game where there's multiple different timers that are going on. It's a turn-based game, so you're trying to manage how many actions I can take given a specific turn, per how many characters I have, and the placement of those characters matters depending upon the placement of where the enemies are, how many shots I can take, how I'm lining those up. If I put my characters too close together, the enemy's probably going to throw a grenade out and, you know, blow up all my characters at once. And so you're constantly juggling, you know, a whole array of information coming at you. And I think it teaches you and helps you understand making use or making sense of large amounts of information coming at you. Kind of like what you're saying with like math problems, or word problems, instead of just a normal 2 + 2 = 4 and, you know, 4 × 4 = 16. it's getting into the problem statements of, you know, I have two apples, you take, you know, one apple away, how many apples are left? It helps you think a little more complexly. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, and then what you do is you get the games that allow you to then pick up the gun and go after the person that just took your apple.
Yes. There you go. So it also teaches you how to fix problems, too.
Yes, yes.
I will get the apple picker who took my apple.
Well, and then I'd like to actually go back a little bit and then maybe talk about what we were a little bit before. One of the first games that I ever played on the computer was Solitaire. And a lot of people at the very beginning discredited Solitaire for not doing much as far as helping you with a game or helping you with skills. But I actually think that Solitaire was one of the best games to help people learn how to use the computer mouse. But using it to learn how to double click, single click, click and drag, right click. That was a great game for teaching people how to use the mouse. And I think it doesn't get the knowledge or the accreditation that a lot of people should give it in games, is that we can actually learn how to use a tool by games.
So what does Minesweeper teach you? No. Anyway. Yeah, well, and the other part is maybe video games teach kids how to lose gracefully. You know, I got to think, except for my Call of Duty playing son, who doesn't lose gracefully, he also doesn't play gracefully. It's a lot of screaming involved when he's playing. So, why didn't you guys listen to me? I've already figured out he's going to be a natural-born leader. I'm not sure he'll be a good one, but he's going to be a natural-born leader. I can see that already. He's got the yelling tendencies down and control freak part. So, yeah, I really think he'll be leading people. So we'll see how that goes. But, yeah, what about Call of Duty? What do you think? Does anybody actually learn anything from Call of Duty?
Learn how to swear a lot.
Learn how to swear a lot, yeah.
I think what I learn when I play those type of games is how to break the norm. I know in some games that I play where you see the set path, where you see people are always going to come this way. So if people are always going to come this way, and when this happens, when they come this way, how can I disrupt that? How can I make them doing what they normally do not be good for them so I can actually take advantage of it, or to be set up or to be prepared for what happens when that was a bad mistake on me trying to disrupt them and how to get out of that. That's what I learned from those type of games.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd go along with that, you know, a lot of the shooters and even some of the MOBAs, I'm trying to think what that stands for now. Is it multiplayer online battle arena something? I think I'm sure we'll get, you know, comments from people telling us I'm all wrong, but is it you learn what the standard pattern is, so you try and learn, you pick up pattern recognition abilities so that when it's on this map, people always go and hide here, or they go hide there, or they're always checking these spots for people to hide in, so you learn different skills to help you pick up and recognize patterns and how to avoid falling into those traps and how to set up your own traps. And it does teach you to think critically. And I think those skills apply beyond that, you know, when you're at work and you're faced with some kind of a problem, that, you know, why is this piece of software breaking? It allows you to think better critically, even in those situations, that it frees your mind a little bit to not be in such a rut and a trap.
Hmm. And I was going to say, there was actually a research study done on Call of Duty and education, and reading from the journals, reading from Frontiers psychology, they actually say that Call of Duty, let's see, features unique to Call of Duty, such as in-game tutorials, challenging levels, and eventual boss characters, exist to incentivize the player into learning process analogous to the educational phases of learning, practice, and assessment, teaching kids, which is essentially the scientific method. Would you agree with that? Do you think I'm learning the process, I'm learning the phases, you're learning pattern recognition, you're assessing other characters in the game? Do you think mentally we start using the scientific process to kind of pull things apart and to test theories and to test reality?
I think after you've played the game for a while, that's what you're doing. In the beginning, I'm sure it's just all about learning the game. If you enjoy the game and like the game enough, that's what it becomes, I believe.
Hmm. Yeah, in the beginning, you're just overwhelmed by the mechanics and what's going on. Once you get the base mechanics down and you move past that, then I think you can move on to really studying and learning and adapting, you know, what the people are doing, what the AI is doing, and you start really learning and understanding things.
But what about the violence of games like Call of Duty? Do you think that the gore and the violence and the constant profanities in the game lead people to kind of have abusive personalities or to have anger management issues?
I think if they did, I think we would already be having generations where we're nothing but just rampaging, murderous Muppets. Because even growing up for me, you know, that's been, what, two generations ago now, starting out with Nintendo, there were violent games on Nintendo growing up through, you know, Nintendo, Super Nintendo, Sega, and, you know, all the other consoles and platforms. You know, even TV back then was, you know, violent and horrible. It's yeah. gotten more so. And I don't think that the world in general has gotten really any more violent. I think it gets sensationalized a lot more just because, ooh, it makes the news and our ratings go up and yay us. We, you know, we make more money that way. But I don't know that the world is really any more of a violent place.
Now, I don't know now. I think Smash Brothers Melee, maybe, led to violence in the world. So, I do like that game. I like all the Nintendo Universe characters being available to play. Even the one from the Nintendo Watch. I like playing that character. But anyway, I digress. So you don't believe that there's a link between violent games and violent people.
I think the violence was already there. Yeah, I think the violence was already there. I really do. And I have played many a violent game. If I'm playing shooters, I don't own a gun. I don't want to own a gun, and I think it's primarily because I think I know how to use it if I had it. So I wouldn't say that I'm any more violent because of it. I think I know now that if I were to have a gun, what I could do with it. But I think I've learned that from the video game. Hey, I know I don't want to own a gun. So I don't think it does. I don't think it makes anybody any more violent than they weren't already going to be.
So part of the background check now is, did you play violent video games as a child? Nope, I'm sorry, you can't have a gun.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
I think I'm on that bandwagon. I think violent people are going to be violent. I don't know that it really matters, you know, what they watch on TV or what video games they play, what music they listen to. I think that's more down to just nature and not so much nurture. That if you're going to be violent and you're going to act out, sure, you may also listen to violent music. Sure, you may also listen or watch violent TV. You may also play violent video games, but I don't think that it's a cause and effect relationship. I don't think you can make that correlation there.
The correlation that I think you can make, though, is that it would make them better at those things. If there's somebody who has violent tendencies, that they could use a game or game-like simulation to act out and prepare for what they're about to do or anything like that. I think that's where that becomes a little scary, if you will, because they now actually have a way to practice without doing what they were going to do. They actually have a way to maybe get better or prepare for what they're about to do.
Okay.
I think you could say the same thing about the news, that, you know, as much detail as they give on the news about, you know, like school shootings and things of that nature, that's giving all those kids that were going to be violent anyway, they now know, oh, well, if I'm going to, you know, commit some kind of mass shooting, well, here's where this kid's plan broke down and failed. I need to make sure I don't make that mistake, that I plan better than what he did. And that's why I'm so against all of, you know, the broadcast media just jumping all over, you know, those, you know, unfortunate happenings. But I know we're digressing off the topic a little bit, but having overexposure through video games and that, I think maybe it gives them more scenarios to maybe fascinate about or think through, but I don't know that it's going to make them any more or less likely to execute a plan.
Okay. So going back to our education slant, what do you think about gamification of things, that, you know, companies are using games in order to encourage people to go toward positive behavior? You know, different studies, like for example, this is going to sound crazy, but Salesforce.com wanted to increase, you know, the effectiveness of their CRM implementations. And so what they did is they introduced a game where when you're inside the Salesforce app, you look for chickens. And so all the customers turned into chicken hunters, and they ascended to levels of bigger and better status as they used more and more of Salesforce features. So they turned it into a game to learn how to use their software, and then gave out prizes to, you know, to customers who increased engagement using their application. You know, what?
I think that is awesome and horrible.
Yes. Yes, I agree.
People are simple creatures. You know, you appeal to our basest needs and desires, and you're going to get results. You know, if you sit somebody down in a training class and train them on this, you know, boring CRM thing and say, you need to go here and do this and read this book and follow these instructions, oh my God, that's so boring. I don't want to do that. But now you make it a game. I'm all about playing games, because that activates the pleasure center of my brain. And now you're going to throw in, you know, rewards on top of that, like gift cards. Woohoo. Yes, I'm engaged and I'm all about it. So it's awesome, and it's horrible because of, I can see exactly how you're exploiting people, but good on them for thinking of that and putting it into play.
Yeah. I mean, you know, what's, you know, different ways you could do the same thing at work. You know, you could try to turn things into a game. I know one company I have experience with use a similar approach, use games to try to get employees to engage with each other, to try to improve communication, and they offered prizes. And, you know, that was how they tried to encourage people to communicate better. I mean,
I think that game taught me who doesn't communicate.
Yeah,
I think that's what that taught me, is who is not going to communicate, who am I going to have to work on, who am I going to badger in order to get the information from. I think that's all I learned from that game.
Yeah, you know, I don't know, we should probably like have prizes you give out if you meet certain goals in a project. Oh, you did this, great, you know, here's a piece of candy, congratulations.
But that probably also exemplifies how much incentive it takes to get certain people over some barriers that some people, communication is just really, really hard. Talking to people that they don't know, giving up their time to meet strangers on teams that they don't really know, don't really care about, don't really interact with, that's a really big hurdle. And, you know, especially if you're talking about some severe introverts, you know, the incentive is going to have to be really, really big, really quick. And it's going to have to be something that they're really invested in getting. You know, it's not going to be a one size fits all type reward.
Now, you know, like, for example, I use a fitness tracker, and inside the fitness tracker app, there are challenges and they offer contests, or you can challenge other friends and family to try to accomplish the same goals or try to beat each other. Go like step goal, for example. In my family, one of us will challenge our belts to get this many steps in a week's time. You know, those are kind of friendly competitions, but the benefit is that, you know, it, you know, in theory boosts your health. So, well, I mean, what do you think about things like that? I mean, I think very much people like to be challenged. Some people like to compete. I'm not that way, but some people do like to compete with each other and like that, and that gives them a way to compete with each other.
I think competition is always good. It depends on if everybody is willing to be involved, if everybody likes what the media or the medium is to deal with those challenges. I would be on the other side. I don't know if I want to do that challenge. You go ahead. I'm good. I want to do my exercise my way or anything along those lines. I just don't know that that's a way that you can get everybody involved with those challenges and get everybody to follow along that path of we should all exercise.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, everybody has their own motivations. And then True. There are some people that just don't have any motivation at all. But
true.
And I know, no, like speaking for me, I'm not a competitive person at all. So if you engage me in that realm of I'm doing this and now I'm challenging you to do, you know, a little bit better than me, I'm likely going to just hand you the crown and say, go for it, knock it out of the park. I don't care.
Okay. Now, going back to video games and education. So most video games are a highly social activity, don't you think? Do you think that that helps us with interpersonal relationships with other people? Or I would say probably Call of Duty, for example, probably helps you deal with difficult people. Do you think there are any skills that come from that?
Absolutely. I don't think I would be as good of friends with Chuck if we didn't play a lot of the same video games together. I really think that it helps build relationships, that it helps bridge that gap that I might not have known Chuck for the most part. But because we play a lot of the same video games and because I really respect his video game knowledge and his depth and experience, I really enjoy hanging out with Chuck online.
Yeah, I mean, I know I've made a lot of really good friendships online, but I don't know if I would go so far as to say that that's improved my skills at making friends or if it's improved my interpersonal skills. I mean, because, you know, I look at something like Call of Duty and there typically, you know, it's a lot of kids or young adults being punks, and typically all you're doing there is, yeah, I don't want to deal with this, and mute all, and you just turn the audio off.
Well, okay, so do video games make people happy, or does it help relieve stress? Do you think it helps you deal with life stress by playing video games?
Sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely something I look forward to at the end of my day, is coming home and unwinding in front of the computer, playing some games for, you know, an hour or two, it just it allows you to escape the world a little bit.
So, I mean, do you think kids learn physics from Angry Birds?
No.
Okay.
Kerbal Space Program, possibly, but not yes. Angry Birds.
Okay. Yeah, well, I'm just wondering. There was this... And do you think that video games teach ethics and morality?
Yes, most definitely.
Yeah. Yes, that is true. They do.
Trying to think if there's any games right offhand that I can think of that have definitely taught me some of that. I know there were some poignant moments in Pillars of Eternity where they were making some really good comparisons about religion and how it's dangerous to blindly follow others into a religion and you know, things of that nature. So I know there are lessons to be learned from video games and the plot lines that they put forward. I'm struggling to recall some of them right offhand now. And I refuse to fact check. I'm stating it now.
I was going to say, be careful. I fall into that category of people that blindly follow things for faith. anyway. Well, you know, I think, the you know, the dynamics and the physics of Angry Birds is interesting. I don't know, but and then I have played video games that required teamwork. Like I remember playing Quake. Man, it was just such an awesome game where you're playing Capture the Flag, and you've got friends that are playing. They're on your team, and you're fighting your own line together. This is back when modems were the thing, though, but. And you're playing games and you got other people playing and you're going trying to capture their flag and Quake. And those were some awesome times. I mean, I totally, you know, definitely from a, you know, socialization thing, I think that's awesome. And you find out pretty quick who you can count on. You know, you find out what kind of person somebody is. If they're not the kind of person that has your back in a game like that, then, you know, well, you know, can I trust this person in real life? You know?
Yeah.
I mean, is that a jump? Is that a leap to say that?
No, I don't think so. And there was a really interesting game that came out. I think it was PlayStation exclusive called Journey. And Phil, I don't know if you've played it or not.
Probably not.
Where you are basically this little robed character wandering out through a desert. And you're completing different sort of physics-based puzzles. And people could wander in and out of your world, basically. It was just kind of random matchmaking. And the only communication that you could do was to... I think you could stand, you could jump, and you could emit like a little chirp-type noise. There was no voice chat in it. So you had to learn how to, you know, get people's attention by, you know, chirping. And if you wanted them to stand somewhere specific, you'd have to, you know, chirp and jump and, you know, try to get them to, you know, come over here without being able to tell them, come over here and stand right here and work out these puzzles together. It was a really neat dynamic, and it worked really, really well. But it was amazing how much communication you could get across with just, like, chirping.
Isn't that the complete plot to Wall-E?
Pretty much.
All they could say is Wall-E. But anyway, that's the whole premise. Yeah, you can't talk at all. Yeah, that's cool. I'm trying to think of some of the games I've played over time that I thought were highly socialized, and not counting The Sims.
I find very much that hanging out and chatting while we're playing Heroes of the Storm is a good one. It's very much a MOBA, which does stand for Multiplayer Online Battle Arena, and yes. And very much it kind of gives you the what you were saying earlier too, Roy, about can I trust this person? Going up and working with one of the four other people that are playing the game, and you kind of working in unison to handle the path, and then kind of emitting a ping to an area and saying, we all need to come here and deal with this. And while three of them might come, one person knew to stay back and try to handle something else that was going on. So I find that very much interesting to kind of see who's paying attention, who's working for the same goal, and who's just listening to music and not paying attention at all. So,
wait, I'm sorry. What'd you say? I wasn't paying attention.
No. I'm sorry. What?
Oh, sorry. Okay.
Sorry. What?
No. Yeah. Exactly. I said I'm sorry. I wasn't paying attention. Yeah. No. I think that's great. I think that's one of the great things about video games. Yes, we all have this place in our brain that gets all excited when we do well in a video game and we get the thrill. And if we sit in front of the video game long enough, we have an epileptic seizure or start getting motion sickness because the screen's moving so fast we can't keep up anymore. But, you know, I do think video games do definitely have a benefit, and that there are definitely different ways it can be used in education and drone wars. You know, if we start fighting the world off now. But, yeah, I think that's all very neat. And, well, you know, what are some of, like, the best video games that you've ever played? Now, if you have, like, what's, like, your top three games of all time that you played that were multiplayer and you got to play with other people?
I can't pick my children. Are you – what?
Minecraft is going to have to be up there on in the top three for playing with other people, having a good time doing it. Another one that I play that I think that more people should check out is a great game called Don't Starve. I can't play the solo version of this game. I just don't have the patience. But when me and my family get together and play Don't Starve together, that's a great game to one person's out harvesting wood, the other person's back making sure that the home base, everything's working well at, and then somebody else is out gathering resources and other resources. And we kind of all pull together to face the various elements of the world that are about to be inflicted on us at any given time. And then I'd have to say probably last... Wow, to actually, yeah, I understand what you're saying, Chuck. I would have to say HOTS, Heroes of the Storm again, would have to be another great multiplayer game that I'm playing. Just good times.
Are those last two games on Steam?
Minecraft is not. No, Heroes of the Storm is free, but it's part of Blizzard's Blizzard's game group. But Don't Starve and Don't Starve Together, they are very much on Steam.
Okay, so like the Heroes of the Storm, you said it's free?
Yeah, it is.
Whoa. Well, is it use that dreadful Battle.net, or they've got a better way to do the servers?
It's Battle.net, and there's nothing dreadful around about awesome.
Yeah, Battle.net has very much changed since the original Diablo days.
Oh, good, because that's when I used it, and I hated it. So, but, you know. Of course, I always hated the PKs. That, you know, that's what I hated about it. Anyway, but preacher's kids. No, I mean player killers. That's what I meant. Player killers. So
and your games, Roy? Do you have any your top three games?
Wow, that's tough because it's been so long. But I would have to say my favorite game of all time is Diablo 2. Yeah. That I have put lots of hours and investment in that game, and my kids and I have played it together, and that's the part about it that I like the most. Yeah, the game playing by myself would not be that fun, but playing together and, you know, cranking up one of the PCs in the house, and this is a server, and playing against each other, staying off Battle.net, but just playing with each other collaboratively is a lot of fun. And we got Diablo 3 for the Xbox, and it just wasn't the same. It's much better you know, to be across from each other on different screens playing the game, but talking to each other. And we can chat in the game, but we didn't have to because we're in the same room together. But, you know, that's a lot of fun. Trying to think of other games that I like that are multiplayer. That Portal 2 has been a lot of fun. Now that it's got, you know, two player, that's been a lot of fun playing that one. But Portal is just a great single player game. But Portal 2, I like the fact that you can do two players, and that's a lot of fun. Third runner up, that's tough. Mainly because I don't game enough, so that's the fault there. It is of my own that I haven't gamed enough. I'm missing something in life. I must go play games more so that I can learn things and work on my social interaction better. So, yeah, I'm stuck. Chuck, you gonna throw at least one out there?
Yeah, I think I've got three. So first and foremost, definitely is EverQuest. That was the game that I put the most hours into and made some of my longest lasting adult friendships. I've got people that I still talk to and we're still great friends almost 20 years later now. So that has to go up there as the pinnacle.
That brings Quake to mind for me because I'm still friends with the people I played Quake with a long, long time ago. So I'm sorry.
And then, I would say the next one is probably Dark Age of Camelot. That was probably the second or third MMO that I played, and I had a lot of fun stomping around the battlegrounds and doing the realm versus realm combat with some of my guildmates that came over from EverQuest, of course. That was just a really fun setup of a game where, you know, you could take out a small band of people and go capture keeps and just generally cause chaos. And then I was going to say also Portal 2 is a really fun multiplayer game because you can have some great hijink moments with the portals that you create and the physics of that world. So I had a lot of fun playing multiplayer with that.
Yeah, that is a good multiplayer game. I definitely like that. So that's probably the most current multiplayer game that I've played with any kind of regularity. So Gauntlet. Oh man, Gauntlet was awesome.
You're kind of going back to your Diablo days.
The remake's okay, but the original. I'm sorry, but you know, just thinking about it, of all time, I was suddenly thinking, what is my favorite game of all time? And I liked playing Gauntlet Dark Realms on the PlayStation 2. That was a rocking game. It was glitchy, but it was a fun game that me and my kids play together.
Yeah, but we lost the "your wizard needs food badly," and I really miss that.
Yeah,
about
I don't like the new one. The new one, no, it's not as fun. It's just not as fun. So, plus it took more hardware to play. That was kind of a downer. So, you know, that's the thing. In any household that has kids, you can only afford one really awesome gaming machine. And then there's the other computers.
Yes.
You can't have more than one gaming machine. It's just not financially feasible. So that's why the consoles come into play, because at least they have a set price and you can buy a console and, you know, so.
Yeah. Well, and what my nephew does for any time that he knows he's possibly going to get some presents, everything for him is he wants Steam cards. He wants everything's in Steam cards. So if you want to reward him, you send $10 Steam card or you buy him a game on Steam, he's good to go.
Cool. I like that. All right. Well, I think we've about reached the end of our topic here. So yay or nay, video games are educational?
They are.
They are. And there was one thing I was going to bring up before we wrap up, and that was that there are a couple games out there that are I guess they bring up more real life topics. One of them is Depression Quest. And it's not so much a game, but it is a game. It helps you, it can help people that play the game understand what it's like for someone to live with depression. And you know, I have sent this to family members. I've sent it to friends as someone who has lived with depression off and on most of my adult life. I think it was very eye-opening for my family members and some of my friends to play through that game that they had no idea what it's like for the depressed person's mind, how they think, how their mind works, the decisions that you go through, and kind of the general concept of the way this game works is you are a non-gendered person, I think named Alex, that suffers from depression, and you're put in these different scenarios. And of course, the option that you want to take is like, I'll go talk to a therapist about my depression, and that option is grayed out. You can't select it. The only other two options are like, you know, I'll go home and, you know, lay on the couch and cry for the evening, or I'll go wander the streets aimlessly and not talk to anybody. And then, you know, as you go through the game, you're constantly barred from taking the option that you want to take, because that's really what it's like to have depression, that you know what you should do and you just can't do it. Something inside you just prevents you from being able to do it. So that's kind of a public service announcement out there, throwing that one out there. DepressionQuest.com.
Wow, actually, that's awesome. You know, just thinking about kids and gamification, let's say, for example, I mean, that's a game that would, I mean, teaches empathy to people, to better relate to people who are suffering with depression. And also thinking about like gamification, like for example, let's say someone is diabetic, and an app helps them remember to take their insulin shots or whatever is, however their treatment method is, or to remember to take their medications by, you know, take your medication, you press a button, you get a reward in the game or something, or your reminder comes up, and if you do something, then it plays hooray on your phone or something. No, that sounds really awesome. I like that. That's an amazing use of a game to teach other people to understand the world that someone's depressed is going through.
There was another one. It's similar, but it's not quite in the same vein, and it's called Sybil, where you are literally playing through basically the life of the creator of the game, and it's trying to educate people on the I guess alternate lifestyles, and that it's, you know, how hard it can be to live outside the norm of society and the pressures that you go through, and you know, that we need to all be a little bit more accepting of everyone and their lifestyles and, you know, that sort of thing, their life decisions. That was a really interesting one. And then the last one, to end on a happier note, is Rocksmith, which that's a game that you can use that will actually teach you how to play a guitar.
I'm familiar with that. Phil, don't you have that?
Oh yeah. I have both Rocksmith and Rocksmith 2014.
Wow.
So, you know, I know a lot of people were originally saying, "Oh yeah, Rock Band, you know, I know how to play a guitar now 'cause I've played, you know, Rock Band." No, you don't. But Rocksmith truly does teach you how to play the guitar, and I've heard awesome and amazing things about it. I've never used it because guitars aren't my thing, but I have heard from a lot of musically inclined people that Rocksmith is legit.
It is very legit.
All right, and now Phil's going to tell us how legit it is.
Well, it's very legit. I would say that I would not be nearly as good on the guitar or the bass, If I didn't use Rocksmith, I find that playing even some of the songs that I do not like, playing them give me, oh, I would say, skills or abilities to play other songs better. It's really kind of cool. It's really kind of nice. I wanted to do that more growing up, but the parents wanted me to play violin. But I really wanted to learn guitar. So this actually allows me to learn guitar, and there's cool little side puzzles and side games that you can play to actually learn chords, those type of things. But being able to play some of my favorite songs, and they keep adding new songs too. So being able to play some of my favorite songs, learning them, and then actually being able to step away from the video game and play them for people is very cool.
And on our next episode, Phil's going to do Rocksmith for violin.
No.
Oh, or well, okay, so you're going to play a song for us on the next episode? I don't know.
And yeah. No.
All right. That's okay. This is a low budget production. Good. I can't afford the, you know, to pay the royalties or whatever you have to pay in order to be allowed to use somebody else's music. Right. So that's why the theme for this show is self-imposed.
You have to keep it to a 30-second clip.
Say again?
I said you just have to keep it to a 30-second clip or less.
Oh, okay. I think we're reaching the end of the episode because, Chuck, you're getting laggy. So.
Uh-oh.
Oh, no. All right. Anyway, I think that's a wrap, guys. I really appreciate you both taking time out to join me in this discussion. And I don't think we solved world peace, but I think it was a good discussion.
It was. Play more video games.
Peace through video games.
Peace through video games. Yes, there needs to be a game to teach people how to get along with each other. I think it's called Grand Theft Auto, but I'm not positive about that.
Or Mad Max. Or Saints Row.
Saints Row. I haven't played any of those games, but, you know, so I can't vouch for their educational qualities, so I'll have to take your guys' word for it.
Yeah, please send Roy some Steam cards, people.
No, don't send me Steam.
Yes.
I don't currently have a computer that can play games, so I will play Portal, sort of, anyway. MacBooks are great for video production, great for music production, lousy for video games. I don't know why. Well, I do actually. It's the video card, but yeah. All right. Well, thanks, guys. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
All right.
Don't forget to do your spiel.
Hey, don't forget to tip the waiter. Oh, wait. All right. Thanks. Listen to the next podcast in this series, which is about another topic. Not this one. No. Next topic is, I'll have a Raspberry Pi to go, please. We're going to talk about Raspberry Pi, Beagle, 3D printing, and the age of the MakerBot culture. I hope you guys will tune in. Thanks so much for listening. You have just listened to the One Off Tech Podcast. Have a good week out there.